gradually through the very simple problem of living with each other. The rules become more or less obvious. There are things we find we can do and things we cannot do. There are also big moments when we do something we think is wonderful and it turns out badly. We know that every action has a reaction, and that if we want to grow, want to improve, want to become educated people, we must be able to classify the reaction of conduct, our own and everyone else's. It is far more important to discover what we cannot do and keep the rules than it is to add a vast amount of superficial education that tells us nothing. It does not help us to discover what is wrong. And the education itself is not necessarily showing us what is right. Therefore, we have to supplement this situation. I know several younger persons today who have had fair educational backgrounds, and every one of them is satisfied that he cannot live with what he's learned in school. It will not work. It will do certain things, but it will bring with it a series of consequences that he cannot stand. And if he is faced by them, they may destroy him. One of the common enemies of the human mind is success. And of course, we all are looking for that. Success has to be estimated in terms of experience. To some people, Napoleon was a success. Others do not agree with this. Some, and a good many, believe that the most successful person who ever lived was Jesus Christ. Others do not think so. They believe that the success is in terms of wealth, worldly power, influence, and intense competition. Well, they believe this. And schooling hasn't changed this belief. It hasn't done a thing to moderate it, even. It has only promised the graduate that if he does what he's told, he'll get a larger swimming pool. But this isn't what he's really in need of. It's nice to have and all that type of thing, but if he has to barter his integrity to get it, he's going to get in more trouble than the luxuries are worth. He has to find this out. He has to experience it. He has to come to the firm conclusion that there are rules that he must keep, and that if he keeps these rules, they will keep him. So, younger people today are out looking for the rules. They are forming their own groups to do certain useful things. They want to get back to the land. They want to get to the point where they're self-supporting in the simple needs of life. They want to find ways in which they can work together for mutual advantage. And to many of them, it is very important that the environment which they create has religious values. As a result of this search for religious values, we have had an upsurge of religion all over the world. An upsurge that has one very interesting factor, namely that for the first time, many people are coming in contact with a religious belief about which they have not been disillusioned. Many of the people who are naturally religious have been disillusioned by the unfortunate situations that arise within local theological groups. But some religion or philosophy that they have never had any contact with directly, but which has ideas that they consider to be ethically correct, will serve them better because they have not been through it and disappointed. So many new ideas, new beliefs, have a strong following by those who are tired of the old ones that have never worked. On the other hand, the older groups are also making changes. They are becoming more concerned with social circumstances. They are beginning to believe and realize that religion has something to do with families, that it has something to do with the growing of children, that it has something to do with the psychological, emotional relationship of the individual to his job and to the society of which he is a member. So many of the older, more conservative groups are branching out into social service programs. and also into psychological programs for the service of the younger members or whoever may need help. So we now have psychological religious counseling. We have the realization dawning upon us that religion has something to do with a good life well lived, here, now. That the consolation of faith is its power to reform our own lives. So we have healing groups, holistic groups that believe definitely that every art or science that we practice must have its religious foundations or it will not survive. We also become aware that the religious elements contribute largely to therapy, either preventive or curative, and that the only thing that is a real help to the psychiatrist or psychologist working with afflicted people is the possibility of reaching them on an idealistic level, reaching them on an inspirational foundation, pointing out better things, more important things, in which they can have faith, and which will never and can never disappoint them. So we find more and more religion involved in almost everything we do. But, of course, the moment this happens, another factor comes in. Most theological seminaries give their graduates a considerable conditioning in the management of a religious organization or institution. They are warned from the beginning of the difficulties of maintaining a high ethical level in the profession of the clergy, that the pressures on them probably are greater than on any other section of society. The individual who is dedicated to doing it right has more enemies than probably anyone else in the world, simply because people do not want to do it right if it interferes with doing what they want to do. And religion has to be so conditioned that it is available as a spiritual reference frame, but nobody is expected to live according to its rules. This is a tax upon almost any idealistic minister. It is a problem that he has to face, and it is a problem that has driven many out of the clergy. The fact that it is a struggle to maintain a church in which you can teach people to be more honorable and at the same time hold the congregation. They tell you, yes, they believe everything you say, but they do exactly as they please in their personal relationships. So this problem still requires a great deal of conditioning. Now, probably one of the interesting elements of this point is that if we think of deity as a factor of retribution only, we also have been asked theologically the question whether deity can damn parts of itself. Can deity cast part of its own creation into hell? This seems to be a rather unlikely situation. So what we commonly think of as punishment from deity is simply the reaction of our own attitudes, which are incorrect. It isn't deity damning us. It is ourselves getting our own lives into conditions that we cannot solve. We do not know what to do after we finally paint ourselves into a corner. So in those emergencies, sometimes we do what the sick man does. We go to the doctor, but as soon as we feel better, we forget the physician. This type of thing brings with it a sense of why have we grown up this way? Why is it that from childhood on we were not taught a few simple facts? Why are we not able to discriminate now? Why are we still shopping for religion? Why are we still striving to get as much as we can and give as little as possible? Why are we perfectly willing to vote for somebody who promises a gain at somebody else's loss? We don't know why we do these things. But one of the reasons is the school system has failed us. We should have known better by the time we got out of grammar school. We should have graduated from high school with determined and dedicated values in ourselves. We should have a clear vision of what is best for us and best for the community, and realize clearly that when we compromise our own integrities, we are responsible for our own misfortunes. So we get up to the point, almost to retirement sometimes, in which we have never accepted or experienced the need for integrities. They are something other people should have. They are something that the world certainly needs, but they're something that interfere with our doing what we want to do. And that's a mistake. If, however, we could get some form of educational structure, and parents are beginning to worry about this more than a little. All over this country, and in many other countries also, parents are getting together to form organizations and groups to supervise the moral life of their children, and their own moral lives, for that matter. They are beginning to realize that if there's to be any integrity, honesty, kindliness, sympathy, understanding, and true progress in humanity at this stage of things, it has got to come from personal effort. It cannot be dependent upon the major institutions which we have created and which we have thoroughly corrupted. So all over, people are beginning to think of trying to do something themselves, to warn their children, to warn their friends, to indoctrinate young people with better ideas and convictions. And the young people are beginning to notice it. They are beginning to create a new concept of what constitutes a peer group. They all want to follow the example of the most popular member of their class or in their school. But when they see this popular member in the hospital as a hopeless narcotics addict, he doesn't quite look like a peer anymore. He does not seem to have the glamour that came from living wildly is damaged when you see what happens to the wild livers. They get into one difficulty after another. And young people who are still not completely under the influence of economic pressures are beginning to see the facts of life. They are beginning to realize the mistakes they're making, and they don't wish to continue them. We also have the same problems arising with older people who are continuously killing each other on the road with their accidents, who are drunk driving and narcotics addict driving, and one by one these glamorous personalities fade out in misery, sorrow, and distress, and death. This type of thing is affecting young people. Here, experience, observation, and reflection are coming into their own. But this is being forced upon them by their own mistakes. There should be some basic standard acceptable to persons in all ages, by means of which the more grievous mistakes can be avoided or prevented, or if they exist, corrected as speedily as possible. Now we get out into the big world of knowledge. Here we have science. Here we have the great discoveries which are threatening the survival of humanity. We are getting these discoveries from the great institutions that we have regarded as infallible. It is the great university and the great laboratory that is now giving us the great headache. And yet we are assuming, or taught to assume, that these people who are creating these disasters are the greatest, noblest, and most thoroughly trained of our citizens. That they are the ones who know. They are the ones who have gained the full advantage of education, but are graduating without any realization of responsibility to humanity. Education is in for trouble. And this trouble is spreading, and it's spreading now. The time is very much in sight in which there has to be a new estimation of what constitutes knowledge. We have to begin to realize that knowledge without integrity is the greatest falsehood of all. That the knowledge of advancement and progress must be measured in one thing. The only way in which progress can be properly estimated is in terms of securities. Securities are those values, the practice of which will bring no detriment to anyone. We have to realize that the entire problem of our modern way of life is that we must find out what constitutes progress. Is progress just simply complication? Is progress the substitution of a robot for a human mind? Is progress the enlargement of nuclear research? Is progress the rising value of gold on the stock exchange? Is progress wealth? Is it the exhaustion of natural resources? Is it the permission by which we allow our planet to be ravaged of everything that is of value? Is progress proven by crime, degeneracy, disease, mental breakdowns, and death? If so, then progress is not worth cultivating. Progress must be man's gradual maturing of his own life. A better life, a richer life, a more useful life. Progress must be that he can come home and sit down quietly and think in peace. That he is fairly selective in the things that he does. That he will not support that which is useless, worthless, or dangerous. That he will not waste his time trying to forget the problems of society when he should be using every faculty that he has to find ways in which he can maintain his integrities and assist others to do the same. So we have this problem that we have worshipped progress. We have worshipped the concept of Star Wars. We have worshipped all kinds of extraterrestrials. We have worshipped the planet of the apes. This type of thing is now considered to be amusement, informative, and just a little prophetic. We all have certain fears that the worst things we are watching might come true. Why are we doing this? What has happened? We didn't gain this from the basic concept of education as it was known in ancient times. We did not get these thoughts from Plato or Aristotle. We did not get them from Buddha or Christ. We did not get them from any of the real patrons of progress that we know. We have always been taught to use life intelligently. We have been taught of the dignity of simple things. We have been taught to be moderate in all ways. We have been taught never to be slaves of our own possessions, and yet we have never learned the lesson. All we do is keep on in the same way. And it will probably go on that way until we come up against a major issue that we're not going to be able to meet by platitudes or by raising the national debt. We're going to come to something that needs what we have needed for a long time, and that is a completely new outline of how to teach people what to do and how to live. And we cannot depend upon working only with the older generation. We have to start in with young people. We should have people working all the time to improve the curriculum, to find out what young people need to know. And there is a great need for a complete rewriting of most textbooks. The textbooks are miserable things. They are enough to discourage anybody. They are monotonous, they are hard-headed and difficult, complicated, and they have no life in them, no reality in them. A young man I was talking to not long ago was talking about a history book he was in his class. He said that the book was so dry, so definitely factual according to a concept of fact, that the truth was never in it. There was no understanding of anything. There was no real appreciation of anything. And when the entertainment field makes a so-called historical film, it is so distorted that it has lost all value as far as educational importance. Everywhere we are distorting things that we should rationalize. Children's textbooks should be things they love to read, that teach them nice and good values, and they learn to love them, that there is excitement, there's variety, there's change, and everything that is taught excites constructive imagination and gives the individual a sense of participation in the problems of living. The school curriculum is at least 100 to 200 years behind its times. And every teacher who tries to do anything about it that is constructive is likely to be sent into the suburbs. There is no interest in these things. The status quo, a kind of a deep hypnosis, has enveloped us, a sort of intellectual smog. And this smog is rising from a whole group of corrupted processes which we do not need and should not have. One thing, however, we can realize, that in spite of all of this situation, we are still individuals. We do not have to do the things that we do not believe are right. Or at least, to the best of our ability, we can minimize our faults if we cannot completely eradicate them. We can also add to the picture a strong statement of values, so that we can, little by little, manage our own affairs. If we can do this properly, we will recover from another danger of the moment, and that is complete disillusionment, the breaking down of our psychological integration. Worrying ourselves to death, frightening ourselves to death, and waiting each day for more bad news is not good for the human being. It is not good to live this way. It is not good for the person to feel that the situation is hopeless and helpless, and that there is nothing he can do about it anyway. Actually, there are things he can do about all these things. One thing he can do is to decide in his own mind whether things are helpless and hopeless. In order to really get that philosophy of life deeply embedded in our natures, we have to carefully and conscientiously avoid all that is good. We have to take away from our thinking the long-range policies that might in the long run be of the greatest value to the greatest number. We have to watch the disaster, but forget why it happened and what we should be doing about it. There are many ways in which the individual can restore a certain basic sense of values. And one, of course, of these most important weapons or instruments, if you want to call them that, is faith. The realization that somewhere in the pattern of things, this vast universal mystery of which we belong, that extends through countless billions of stars, as far as thought and mind can travel, and beyond the reach of the most exalted imagination, that all this great pageantry of things cannot be disrupted and destroyed by a few stupid human beings. That in all that we can do to destroy ourselves is to make a minor mess of things. But in the universe, we are not going to become to the end of anything. The greater pattern of things is that when we get to a certain degree with fatigue, we will drop out of the material world and come back later. But in the great picture of things, everything is working together for good. The difficulty is we don't appreciate that kind of good. Our idea of good is luxury. We wish to drift to heaven on flowery beds of ease. We want to think only of deity as infinite benevolence regardless of our mistakes, and ready to forgive even the major mistakes that we make. Actually, behind all of this pessimism, which is affecting us, and which does affect us, there is ground for a great realization that these things could not happen if there were not laws. We can't break something that doesn't exist. We cannot go against that which has no existence or reality. The reason we're in trouble is because there are laws. And these laws are right. They are honest, they are difficult, but they're real. We are therefore constantly in the presence of the fact that our destiny is being protected at the expense of our appetites. We're going to have to change our own ways. But we are not headed for destruction. We are only headed for a disillusionment in things that never had any reality anyway. Education should begin to work with these problems. It should take every incident that arises in our confused political situation today and explain to young people why there is confusion, what is wrong, and what should be done about it. And with the newspaper in one hand and the piece of chalk in the other, a school teacher could accomplish quite a good deal. It's just the problem of getting a point of view. But if your point of view isn't what the majority of people want, you have a hard time putting it over. But today, the majority of people is becoming more aware of this. And day by day, every newspaper contains reports of new groups of private citizens getting out and doing the things that need doing. This is good. The reason they're doing it that way is because that was the way they were supposed to do it in the first place. We were never supposed to allow public officials to do our thinking for us. We were right in assuming a certain parental leadership. And if that leadership is wrong, then we do not have to follow it. It's just like a family with drunken parents. If this is the situation, it is not necessary that all the children become alcoholics. It is this just the lack of the organization of life. It's the failure of education to actually educate people to be people, to be intelligent human beings. In Buddhism, we have this concept of the universal commonwealth, the great commune of existence. We are all citizens of something that extends beyond the stars. We are part of a tremendous universal democracy. We are part of a merit system that extends beyond the most distant galaxy. We are part of a rule that says, as ye sow, so shall ye reap. And if we begin to realize that, to the point that we realize that by sowing, we must reap what we sow. Therefore, it is better to sow good seed in the first place. When we reach that, we will begin to be educated. Because that is the basis of education. That the individual is responsible for his own actions. And groups of individuals are responsible for collective action. If the individual is willing to accept a universe in which laws are real, if he is willing to accept a purposeful destiny for existence, if he is willing to assume that this vast machinery of life that we know is governed by a primordial consciousness and intelligence, that there is a divine spirit, a universal soul behind all manifestation, and that this is not a theological problem, it is actually a scientific problem. The real science is cause and effect, immutable. One thing we can depend upon absolutely, a fact of cause and effect, and that this law is the primary manifestation of the divine purpose. That this law is the thing which has to be gradually discovered, built into a curriculum for the education of the young and the re-education of the old, built into a pattern by which we gradually come to accept what the ancients knew long ago, namely, that there is a universal divine destiny that shapes the ends of everything that lives. And that regardless of what we think, this destiny is constantly working. We cannot deny it and then look even into the pages of contemporary history. We cannot read the daily newspaper without seeing final proof of cause and effect. We cannot watch the histories of the great, the strong, the evil, and the mediocre without realizing there is law and order in space and in place. Everything is ruled by principles that are infallible. And those are the only principles we have to obey. We do not have to obey corrupt man-made concepts of life, but we have to obey the divine plan of things. We have to recognize and accept that we are part of a great motion, and that this motion has as its ultimate the release and perfection of each living thing. We are all ensouled by a power that will not die. We are all part of a plan that cannot fail. And our great securities and our great hopes and our great fulfillments lie in the acceptance of our proper destiny. And where in the world are we going to go unless these facts become part of the basic training of every child that comes into this world? Why are we going to hope that we can sow in corruption and reap in security? We can't do it. Everything has to be according to its own rules. The beginning of education, therefore, is to learn the rules of life. It isn't the beginning of education to do watercolor painting or basket weaving. It is not part of life for the average person today to learn Greek and Latin unless that's the thing he's dedicating his life to. It is, however, necessary, regardless of specialization in medicine, in law, in science, theology, arts, crafts, that the beginning of education is to realize that in the beginning is integrity, and that this integrity fulfills all the purposes of knowledge. Without it, all knowledge must inevitably fail. So somehow we've got to get this into the consciousness of educators. The only way we're going to get it into their consciousness, probably, is through the continuing failure of what they are doing. Little by little, they're going to alienate themselves. They're going to lose their leadership. They are going to be no longer respected and regarded, and the mistakes that they do not correct will be held against them in the fullness of time. In the meantime, we can't make all the major changes, but we can gradually bring our own personal conduct under the control of a universal law. Accept that we are responsible for our actions. If we injure the body, we are responsible for its sickness. If we injure the neighbor, we are responsible for social and local crime. If we do one thing or another which damages, hurts, aids the evil things of life, we are responsible for the results. If we drive the car with too much alcohol, we are responsible for the tragedy that follows. There is no such a thing as constructive irresponsibility. There is no way in which we can do just as we please, no matter how selfish it is, in a world in which we must do just what is right or all is trouble for all concerned. In the last 50, 75 years, there's been a very serious deterioration in world integrities. This deterioration is the result of the gradual elevation of industry and economics. We are now living under a profit system in which the profits, unfortunately, are not very substantial. Little by little, a materialism, which was never real in the first place, is going to fail us utterly. This is not going to end in poverty for all concerned. It is going to end in a greater security and a greater participation in universal benefits than we have ever known. If we can get the things straightened out, we will never have to put a man in jail for stealing a loaf of bread. We will never be forced to the various corrective methods that we use now, which are simply compensation for the mistakes we make. We have to get into the entire educational system gradually, and in our own hearts and minds first, from there we have to work. The realization that it is perfectly obvious and evident that the plan is succeeding. The failure lies in our inability to decide what is success. We are gradually succeeding, but we are growing the hard way. We are forcing situations so that we must grow by disillusionment, when in reality, by clinging to the facts and the principles and the integrities to begin with, we grow not with disillusionment, but with increasing realization of the eternal providence and its benevolence. Therefore, we don't have to work with these problems as best we can. But one of the things that's got to be done is to realize that education is impossible without a concept of universal purpose. That no one can be educated who simply thinks in terms of one little lifespan and how he can accumulate as much as possible to leave to someone who doesn't deserve it. We have to have a better vision. And as we have a better vision, we will have better health and live longer. We are destroying ourselves by wrong attitudes, and no one can save us from them but ourselves. And to know this is the primary end of education, that each individual must grow up into the use of his own potentials and share with others every virtue and value that he possesses. If we begin to think in this direction, even if it doesn't work right away, it will help, and in the course of time, we're going to be much happier and a better people. Well, that's it.